R-E-A-L
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Hello everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass and you're listening to another episode of Ask a Vegan. A very happy September 23rd, 2012 to you and yours. And so many things to talk about all the time, and this week especially. Do you remember the movie When Harry Met Sally? There's a scene in the film that I always have enjoyed. My partner Gary and I kind of do this routine very often between Harry and Sally. I'm going to try it here. He says, and then she says, repeat after me, Pepper.
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 Waiter, there is too much pepper on my paprikash.
Waiter, there is too much pepper on my paprikash.
Why am I doing this? Okay, when I saw the title of this Mother Jones article recently, Waiter, there's arsenic in my rice, that scene came to mind. But unfortunately, it's not as funny as the movie. This is reality. And there are some new studies coming out that are showing concentrated amounts of arsenic, which is toxic and has been shown to be linked to numerous different problems with human health. So what's the deal? What's going on with our rice? Consumer Reports put out a piece. Let's see, when was it? The date on it is, do I see a date? It's from November 2012. Well, it's not November yet, but obviously the magazine dates itself early, and Mother Jones is what linked me to this article. So I originally read an article, Waiter, there's arsenic in my rice, in Mother Jones. But the study is being reported in Consumer Reports. Let's talk about it, because it's freaking me out. So there wasn't a January investigation by Consumer Reports that found arsenic in apple and grape juices. Nice. And then they tested more than 200 samples of rice products. And they did everything. Iconic labels, store brands, organic products, conventional ones. And as you may know, as the article states, many people are moving towards more manufactured and processed rice products to avoid gluten, which you can find in wheat and other grains like rye and barley. Products made from rice are really filling a niche and a hole and a need, especially with families with children that have gluten intolerance. Okay, but we're finding now that there's arsenic in the rice. And here are some of the trends that the article states that they found from their research. White rice, grown in Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, and Texas, account for 76% of domestic rice, had higher levels of total arsenic and inorganic arsenic in their tests than rice samples from elsewhere. So if you're buying rice, you want to avoid Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, and Texas. Know where your food comes from. And another thing that they discovered, no matter what brand of rice they tested, brown rice had more arsenic than white rice. And this is devastating because many of us in the alternative world of healthy food, the health food movement, know that brown rice has more nutrition than white rice. Most of the vitamins kind of hang out in that hole around the seed that gets milled away to create white rice. And there's arsenic in that area as well. Nice. This study also found that people who ate rice had arsenic levels that were 44% greater than those who had not. And this affects certain ethnic groups, obviously, some more highly affected, including Mexicans and other Hispanics, in a broad category that includes Asians. I'm not surprised, because in those cuisines, Mexican and Asian, rice is a staple. Okay, so the article goes on, and what's interesting is that there is no federal limit for arsenic in food. There is a federal limit for arsenic in drinking water, and it comes from an original proposal from the EPA that said 5 parts per billion would be the safe level. And New Jersey accepted that level, but for some reason, the federal limit is 10 parts per billion, twice the amount recommended by the EPA, and all the other states meet that standard for drinking water. But there's no standard for food, and perhaps now that these findings are coming out, maybe this will change. So there's no limit, so food manufacturers can do whatever they want right now. And that's what's really alarming. What's alarming for me is that this study tested all kinds of rice products, and they tested organic as well. And the organic did not fare any better than the rest of the rice products. What's a rice-eating person to do? A rice-eating vegan to do? But that's not all. Because this article said that rice, okay, I'm crying when I read this, rice is not the only source of arsenic in food. A 2009-10 study from the EPA estimated that rice contributes 17% of dietary exposure to inorganic arsenic, which would put it in third place behind fruits and fruit juices at 18% and vegetables at 24%. What are we going to eat? Now, we know that arsenic is problematic. The article quotes Alan Smith, a professor of epidemiology at the University of California, Berkeley, and he says we already know that high concentrations of arsenic in drinking water result in the highest known toxic substance disease risks from any environmental exposure. And his studies of arsenic in public water in Chile and Argentina help show that it causes lung and bladder cancer and other diseases. Okay, and I was worried about eating the seeds in my apples because they're supposed to have arsenic in them, right? Now, Grant Lundberg, who's the CEO of Lundberg Family Farms, we like them. I buy a lot of Lundberg organic rice. They're doing some testing, and they're sharing their results with the FDA. I'm not sure what they're going to find out. I'm sure they'd like to find out that their rice is better than other people's rice, but meanwhile, it's really hard to say. Now, there's the USA Rice Federation, and they tell consumers there's no reason to be concerned about arsenic in food. Their website says that arsenic is a naturally occurring element in soil and water, and all plants take up arsenic. Some important points here I want to hit on. But one of them is that natural does not mean safe. And so just because plants are taking up arsenic and it's natural does not mean it's safe to eat the product. Now, what's interesting about plants, and I'm learning more and more about this, and the beauty of nature itself, is that there are plants out there that need different nutrients in the soil. And you can grow some plants next to other plants and keep everything in balance, where one plant will provide nutrients for the other plant and vice versa. And some plants will take up an abundance of nutrients that could be contaminating the soil for other plants or for people. For example, I mentioned this a while ago. I was really surprised when I heard it. but farmers often will plant squash in a field that's full of toxic contamination because squashes are really effective at pulling these things up. But that alerted me to, okay, that's really great, but do you want to eat those squashes that have cleaned up the soil and concentrated them all in their own cell walls? No. So that alerted me to going out of my way to make sure my squash is organic. So I do the best that I can and buy most of the food that I eat and make sure it's organic. But squash was like a red light for me that you don't want to eat squash that isn't organic because it really effectively soaks up everything that's bad in the soil. And as this article states, all plants take up arsenic. And so the study was about rice, but it shows that vegetables and fruits also take up arsenic. What are we to do? Well, the thing that's disturbing is that there are a number of reasons why we have arsenic in the soil at rates that are probably more than natural, should I say, or normal. Arsenic can enter the soil or water due to weathering of arsenic-containing materials, minerals in the earth. But humans are more to blame. We're to blame for everything. So we used arsenic since 1910, and the United States has been the world leader of using arsenic since 1910 for agricultural and industrial purposes. And only half of what we started using since 1960s. So we're adding lots of arsenic to our environment. And there's residues from decades of use of lead arsenate insecticides that linger in the soil today, even though some of these substances were banned in 1980, they're still there and the plants are still sucking them up. But something that I think is more problematic is that arsenical ingredients containing arsenic, are used in animal feed to prevent disease and promote growth. And these are still permitted. And then the thing is, these animals in factory farms, most of them today are grown in factory farms. We concentrate them in small, filthy areas so that we can minimize costs and maximize product, i.e. animal flesh, for people to eat. And those animals, not only do they eat, but they poop. And fertilizer made from poultry waste can contaminate crops with inorganic arsenic. This is the problem. So, can people please stop eating chicken so that I don't have to get arsenic in my rice? I'm really, really disturbed about this because I like rice. I like rice a lot. And I do a bit of gluten-free baking and I like to use rice flour. It's a lovely food. Okay, it's not my favorite food. It's not up there with dark leafy green vegetables, but how much arsenic is found in dark leafy green vegetables, she asked. And I'm not sure I have the answer yet. Okay, so what can we do? Number one, we want to look for rice that doesn't come from South Central United States because extensive surveys have shown by more than one research group that rice from this region is elevated in inorganic arsenic compared to other rice-producing regions. Okay, sorry about that, South Central United States, but you need to clean up your arsenic. Now, something else that's very troubling is that there's a lot of infant cereals, foods fed to very young children that contain rice, ergo arsenic. And we know that children are far more susceptible to levels of toxic chemicals than we are. And the limits that we have for toxins, if we even have them, have been based on studies on adults. We don't think of those little future adults enough. What is a mother and a father to do? So this article, I will include a link when I post this podcast, so you can read the entire article yourself. But they do recommend a few things to cut your arsenic risk. I don't know how I feel about these things, but I will share them with you. Test your water. If your home is not on a public water system, have your water tested for arsenic and lead. Okay. Here's something interesting. Change the way you cook rice. So they talk about using a ratio of 6 cups of water to 1 cup of rice for cooking. Now, typically I use 2 cups of water to 1 cup of rice, and I allow the rice to absorb all of the water. And what's nice about this is that you don't lose the nutritional value of the rice, because the vitamins that go into the water when you start the cooking go back into the rice as the rice absorbs all of the water. Well, they're recommending that if you cook in 6 cups of water to 1 cup of rice, you cook the rice until it's done, and then you drain the excess water afterwards. And this is how it's done traditionally in Asia. But one of the reasons why we don't do this is what I just mentioned, because it reduces the rice's nutritional value. So what do you want from your rice? Do you want arsenic and valuable nutrients, or less nutrients and less arsenic? It's your choice. They say that doing rice in this way removes about 30% of the rice's inorganic arsenic content. Okay, and then another thing, of course, which is valuable for so many reasons, is to eat a varied diet. Now, it says some vegetables can accumulate arsenic when grown in contaminated soil to help clean vegetables thoroughly, especially potato skins. Some fruit juices, such as apple and grape juice, are high in arsenic. And what else do they say here? There's a website. I will post this as well. It's FDA.gov. And this is interesting because they have a total diet study analytical results listed. And you can see what foods have more arsenic than other foods. There's also some other elements that they look for, like cadmium, to see what the levels are in different foods. And I think this is an interesting table. You might want to check that out. So can we really trust anything anymore? I don't know. This study was really an eye-opener, and it's disturbing that even with organic food, you can still get the high levels of arsenic. Okay. The other thing about this report that I want to mention, and this is really important. We can panic about so many things. We can worry about many, many things. But our minds are very, very powerful, and we have yet, most of us, the majority of us, I don't know, I could probably even say all of us, but I'm not sure I know that for certain. We have very little control of our minds. We really can learn to take care of our bodies better if we could somehow guide our mind into doing what's best for us. So whenever you're eating, and whatever you're eating, while you're eating, You should not worry. And you should tell your body in that moment, take the good from this food and let the rest pass through. I think our bodies can do that to a great extent. So rather than while you're eating your rice, thinking about this programming and panicking about arsenic, you should just say, take the good from this offering of nutrition. Take what my body needs and let the rest pass through. And there you have it. So what we want to do is we want to know about our food. We want to know where it comes from. We want to know the good things that are in it. We want to know the bad things that are in it. And we want to make things better. And we can make things better by knowing where we're getting our food from, talking to our farmers, letting the researchers do their work and their studies, and letting our government officials know what's important to us. Right? Okay, now letting our government officials know what's important to us, we can't not talk about genetically modified food. And genetically modified food is in the news quite a bit. Now, it's in the news because California has a ballot coming up, Proposition 37. It's getting a lot of attention. The corporations that have the most to lose are spending the most in order to get people to vote this measure down. And it's so important that in California, people vote for it, in my opinion, because it will require that genetically modified food is labeled. And since a large percentage of food comes from California and many products come from California, it will affect the entire industry, not just food in California and from California. So this is really important. Now, what's interesting is the French, j'adore les Français, they came out with a study this week showing that GMO corn and the herbicide Roundup both contribute to tumors in rats. Now, I have to make a disclaimer. I do not support animal studies, but unfortunately, we have them, and sometimes we learn from them. So this study came out using rats this week, and it's very interesting. The basis of the study divided rats into four different groups, and they separated what the rats were eating based on whether they were eating corn that was grown with Roundup Ready, which is the herbicide used to fight the weeds around the corn plants. And they also tested for corn that was genetically modified or not genetically modified. So there were three different things that they were comparing to see how rats would respond to conventional corn or corn that was genetically modified, conventional corn with the herbicide, genetically modified corn with the herbicide, and to see the individual effects, if any, on the Roundup Ready herbicide and the GMO corn. And the results were astonishing, showing that both the Roundup Ready and the genetic modifications caused significant increases in tumors and early death in rats. And everybody's in an uproar for lots of reasons. Number one, we have not had a study of this type ever regarding genetically modified food. The industry has been allowed to determine the safety of these foods on its own, and there have not been any, quote, long-term studies on genetically modified food. Long-term is an interesting word. Now, when you use rats, your long-term study is significantly short relative to a human life, but apparently it's believed that you can make correlations. The critics are saying that there weren't enough units or rats used in the study, and the problem is that these types of studies are very expensive, and the researchers probably did what they could afford to do. But what's important about it is they put it out there, and now other researchers need to duplicate their results or prove them wrong. And this is what's so important. We just have not had anything about the health and safety of genetically modified foods of this magnitude, and nothing has really demonstrated the long-term cumulative effects of consuming foods that have been genetically modified or using a pesticide or herbicide on a food to see how it affects health. So this is really, really fascinating. I'm so glad it happened. It couldn't have happened at a better time because the press is out, and I hope that it will convince more people in California to support this measure against genetically modified food. It's really mind-boggling in some ways, at least to me, how companies can get away with introducing these products into the market without substantial testing. And it all comes down to what? It comes down to money, it comes down to greed, it comes down to people in government, in cahoots with corporations, these revolving doors they talk about, people that have positions with companies like Monsanto, then end up having government positions and vice versa. And this allows for a lot of leverage and for things not done in the best way possible when it comes to the health and safety of humans and all life on Earth. Really, really important article. And I am very excited to read it. I'm sad to read it for the rats and for people and for other life forms that are impacted by genetically modified food and also by toxic herbicides and pesticides. We need to make a lot of changes with our food system. And on that note, we've got this farm bill that our government is supposed to be voting on. And yesterday, Agricultural Secretary Tom Vilsack made the following statement about Congress's failure to pass comprehensive multi-year food, farm, and jobs legislation before the current law expires on September 30th, 2012. And I'm going to read what he said. In a year that has brought its share of challenges to America's farmers and ranchers, the House Republicans have added new uncertainty for rural America. Unfortunately, House Republicans left Washington without passing comprehensive multi-year food, farm, and jobs legislation, leaving thousands of farming families exposed. U.S. agriculture is fighting to maintain the tremendous momentum it has built over the past 3 years. But with natural disasters and other external forces threatening livelihoods of our farmers and ranchers, certainty is more important than ever. Americans deserve a food, farm, and jobs bill that reforms the safety net for producers in times of need, promotes the bio-based economy, conserves our natural resources, strengthens rural communities, promotes job growth in rural America, and supports food assistance to low-income families. Without the certainty of a multi-year bill, rural communities are being asked to shoulder undue burdens. There you go, from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. So our government officials are not really acting in our best interest at this point. The Democrats and the Republicans don't agree on much of anything. Unfortunately, what's been put forward for our farm bills in the House and the Senate, I don't think really address the issues. We need something completely new, completely different, completely overhauled. And at the very minimum, we could extend the current policy and work on something new, but not doing anything at all is really, really serious. So whatever you can do, contacting your representatives, let them know this is unacceptable, and let them know what it is you want. Personally, I want healthy foods supported, unhealthy foods not supported. The subsidies need to change or go away. The media needs to know that they need to be promoting healthy food and not have the same liberties in promoting unhealthy food. A lot of changes need to be made. But you know, the only way changes are going to be made is by our action. We need to be supporting the products that we believe in with our dollars by buying them and not buying the things that we don't believe. How many times have I said that? But we also need to be clamoring and letting our representatives know what we think. I know what I think. I want healthy food for everyone. And then we have the Harvard School of Health, Public Health. I like going to their website. They put out lots of interesting articles from time to time. And they put out a good one recently on calcium and milk. What's best for your bones and health? Now, what's interesting is they come pretty close to saying the things that I agree with in terms of healthy food, but they're still not going all the way. It's like they're afraid. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's just interesting how long it takes to get the information out that many of us already know. So what they're telling us is that milk may not be the best source for calcium. They don't want to come out and say it exactly, but they're kind of saying it. They say that the final answers aren't in, but they're pointing out some of the problems with cow's milk. And one of the things that I wanted to point out that I liked in the article is when they talked about high-fat and low-fat dairy products. And it seems, so you would think that people that were concerned about high-fat dairy products would buy the low-fat dairy products. Well, apparently, it seems that the same people who purchase the high-fat products also purchase the low-fat dairy products. So it's really a wash, a whitewash when it comes to cutting their saturated fat consumption. Or maybe they think, okay, I won't get the fat here, so I'll buy a low-fat product, but then I want my ice cream to be full-fat, so I won't be getting double the full fat. Who knows what they're thinking? But it's not good. And milk is not really a good food on so many levels. The article touches on the links to ovarian cancer and prostate cancer, how many people are lactose intolerant, and a few other things that are related to osteoporosis, like consuming caffeine and cola, too much protein. But something that keeps coming out, and it can come out more and more and more, and that's the dark leafy green vegetables. They've got calcium, they've got vitamin K, and they're the winners. They also mention, and this is, of course, very important, and that's exercise. What's interesting is, maybe you've noticed this, but for most people, their bone health is related to how much exercise they got before 30 years of age. That seems to be the time when we really built up our bone density. And studies show that we lose more bone density, calcium in our bones over time as we age. And people are better off if they've built their bone mass at an early stage. And this can be misleading information because I've seen sometimes where they say you can't build bone mass. You cannot improve your bone density naturally unless you use some of these drugs. And that's not true. I've seen and heard of people that have successfully improved their bone density at later stages in life with exercise. It's that high impact jumping rope, jogging, slamming on your bones a little bit and regularly really makes a difference. But it's not just the bones. You need to have healthy muscles in addition to the bone. One does not go without the other. And this is the thing that kind of annoys me when they encourage, when the medical community encourages taking a variety of these different drugs like Fosamax in order to improve bone density. You need to have strong muscles attached to those bones in order to prevent falls and fractures. Exercise is the only way to do that. So let's get moving. Let's get moving. Okay, it looks like New York may be leading the pack when it comes to animal abusers. So I just read, interestingly, in the Los Angeles Times. This is about New York, and yet I'm reading it in a Los Angeles publication. That New York City may become the largest jurisdiction to establish a registry for animal abusers, similar to the ones for sex offenders. This is interesting. It was prompted by a man who threw his dog out of a third-story window. So the measure was introduced by the city council this week, and it's not sure if it will pass, but it would be pretty interesting to have a registry like this. One of the things that we know, unfortunately, but it's not surprising, is that those that abuse animals, it's been found that it often leads to them becoming violent criminals and torturing children and becoming killers. So the registry could ultimately reduce abusing animals and also serve as a warning system. I think it's kind of interesting. The fine would be $1,000 and a maximum of 1 year behind bars. The thing is, though, the people that are going to do this kind of abuse, I don't know that a fine or a law or jail time would be a deterrent. These people clearly have problems and need help. But that's not the way we operate here in this country. We just slap people in jail or make them pay a lot of money for their mistakes. But wouldn't it be nice if we just helped everybody solve their problems in a loving and non-judgmental and compassionate way? I put it out there. Okay, one more story in the news. Did you read it? I'm not a fan of horse racing. Can you guess why? I've been told that those that go into horse racing, the horses, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course, that is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. I digress. I've been told that horses that race and race well, they end up, when they go into retirement, of being treated very well, et cetera, that it's a good life, and I'm not quite sure of that. Number one, do we really know if horses like racing? Do they want to race? Some of them seem to get into it, but it's exploitation. And we do it in order to gamble and vote on horses. You know, if we really cared about horses and if they enjoyed racing or running, well, why wouldn't we just give them a big space in the wild and they could run with them by themselves or with their families or their friends or with strange horses that they meet, and they could put up their own races and have a gay old time. No, instead, people own these beautiful animals, and they have trainers, and they have veterinarians. And according to this article in the New York Times, horse racing veterinarians are both doctor and drugstore. The more drugs they prescribe, the more money they make. So now, not only do we have to worry about human athletes taking drugs to boost their athletic performance, but now animals as well are being given drugs. Sometimes if they have an inflammation or a wound or a physical problem, they're given a drug to mask the pain of that problem so that the animal can go ahead and run the race. And then there are drugs that will actually boost their performance. Some of them have side effects. Some of them reportedly do not. But still, should we really be doing this? And you know the only reason why we're doing this is for profit. And the interesting thing is some of these owners, I don't like to use the word owner when it comes to an animal, but that's unfortunately the way it is, instead of a provider or someone who agrees to care, a caregiver. No, they're owners. And the owners thought that they selected veterinarians that they could trust, and they thought that they were getting information that was correct from their trainers and their veterinarians, and they did not want their horses to be treated with drugs. But then when they get the bills, they discover, if they're paying attention, that there are drugs that are being given to their horses without their consent. And apparently veterinarians, they benefit because this is in the horse racing business. They benefit from the sale of drugs. So are they really concerned about what's best for the animal or about making money? Only veterinarians can legally prescribe medicine, yet they often let trainers who are paid to win races make medical decisions, including which drugs to use. These veterinarians also have a powerful financial incentive to prescribe drugs. They are both doctor and drugstore. And so the more drugs they prescribe, the more money they make. Selling and administering drugs, in fact, accounts for most of their income. In contrast, veterinarians who treat small animals or pets earn most of their money from examinations and other professional services. Just one more thing in our current society that has gone out of whack, wouldn't you say? I would. Whew. So what do you do? Well, I personally wouldn't support horse racing. I don't like to see animals exploited in any business at all. Okay, a few more things before we go. I was at a wedding this week, and weddings can really be lovely. It's an opportunity for family and friends to get together, spend some time, enjoy each other's company. Often there are relatives that live far away or old friends that live far away, and it's only events such as these where many of them will go the expense and the time and travel to be together with everyone. And this is really the thing that I love about events like this. I'm not typical in terms of what I believe in. Personally, I don't take the sacrament of marriage as something very sacred. Is that redundant? Sacrament and sacred? Anyway, there are so many people who take marriage for granted, and there's a lot behind the history of marriage that doesn't sit well with me. I believe in commitment. I believe in trust. And and understanding that two people have with each other is very, very important. But I do like parties. And that's what I like when I go to weddings. And I went to this one, and it was really a lovely, lovely event. I had a really wonderful time. But, you know, I can't help but notice some things. And I don't want to judge or complain. I just want to acknowledge and somehow deal with it. But many vegans are concerned about what to do when they go to an event. And, you know, will they have the food to eat and how to handle it and who to talk to? And many times when I go to an event, I'm prepared and I let people know ahead of time. Somehow this wedding kind of happened rather haphazardly and I didn't have an opportunity to check if there was going to be food for vegans there. And I just figured, okay, we'll just go with it. We'll wing it. The amazing thing was there was food for everyone for days. And there are different kinds of weddings that you can have all over the world. And in New York, there tends to be a formula that happens very often where you rent a hall or a restaurant, you come in and you have the cocktail hour, and very often there's lots of food during the cocktail hour. In fact, it seems to be enough for a meal or several meals. And yet that's just to whet your appetite. Then you move into the main hall where you have a sit-down dinner. And then after that, oftentimes there's a big spread of desserts that are wheeled out called the Viennese table. And over time, I remember the first time I saw one of these was about 40 years ago. I think they just get bigger and bigger and more involved and more intense and more theatrical as time goes on. And I love the art behind food. I love making food look beautiful. I love presentation. The thing that concerns me is waste and just the quantities. I don't know how much of that is necessary. And when I go to events like these, I can't help but think, oh my God, all the food that is just being wasted here. It's so, so sad. But I did eat well because there was so much food that there was plenty of crudité, raw vegetables. There were, in the cocktail hour, there were different just plain vegetables that were grilled or sautéed. Asparagus, mushrooms, artichoke hearts that were lovely. And then the dinner came along and we told our server right away who we were. And, you know, fortunately, in New York, at least in the 21st century, people know what vegans are. This has changed quite a bit. And they were able to, without much detail given, they had dishes to offer us and it was really quite lovely. And even the Viennese table, which was loaded with all kinds of very rich dairy-based, animal-based desserts, there was lots of fresh fruit. I came home stuffed, no question about it. So there you have it, a lovely, lovely wedding with food for everyone who attended. I just wish I could have collected everything that was left over and given away. Now, the one thing that was a little upsetting to me, well, actually, it was a lot upsetting to me, but during the cocktail hour, there was a carving station. And you know what they carve. They're not carving potatoes and avocados. There was a roasted baby pig on the table. And it was a baby because it was little. And, you know, is it better to have the whole pig exposed than just a roast or a piece? I don't know what the answer is. I think it is better, actually, to have it out in the open so that people, if they're paying attention, can make the connection what it is they're eating. Unfortunately, when I see something like that, it just makes it that much harder to participate. So you say a little prayer. At least that's what I do when I see things like that, sending out some hopeful energy to all the animals that are being raised today to be slaughtered tomorrow or sometime soon. I wish them well. And we haven't posted any recipes this week, but I'm a little behind. And one of the ones that we've been making a bit this week is a recipe we posted a while ago with tofu steaks. And I just wanted to mention them because they are so easy to make and you can really adjust the flavorings to your own liking. So something that I really like is baked tofu, and more stores are offering baked tofu. What's really nice about it is it's a very easy to eat, flavorful food. It's kind of like a substitute for cheese, and you can buy it in many, many stores today, not just health food stores. Open it up and eat it just as it is. Or you can slice it, put it on sandwiches, chop it up in little pieces, put it in salads. It's very, very versatile. The problem I have with it is the store-bought varieties are very high in sodium. So what we've been doing is we've been making our own baked tofu at home. It's really easy. And you, like I just said, you can adjust the seasonings by just letting the tofu soak in a marinade for 20 minutes to overnight or several days. It's really up to you. We typically don't marinate for very long because it's something that we just decide we want to do and we do it quickly. And then you can just put it in the oven, brush some of the marinade on the tofu and let it bake for a while. And it's great. It is so good. It is so tasty. It's so easy. So we do have a tofu steak recipe on the Responsible Eating and Living website. Check it out. And let's tie this show up. I want to remind you, as always, that Responsible Eating and Living is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, and we've got lots of great information on the website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. You're there now. Say hello. Hello. And send me emails at info@realmeals.org. Send me recipes that maybe you like that have animal ingredients in them, and we can figure something out to veganize them. Any questions that are challenging you? I know very often it takes a while for certain things to sink in, especially when it comes to food. And I have many friends that have been vegans for a long time, and there are still some things that they don't understand or they don't get, and it takes repetition. So, and we're so bombarded with all kinds of information that we can only take in so much. That's how our brains work. So it's okay if you've asked a question before and you didn't quite get it or things need clarification, send us an email, info@realmeals.org, and we will do our best, me, myself, and I, to help you out. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to Ask a Vegan. Have a great week.
R-E-A-L
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L
Reels, good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do
when it comes to good health.
We need facts that are true to choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for you.
Real.